In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to be talking big Bears news. We'll be talking a little Bulls, a little Blackhawks, a little baseball. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Season's going on right now, so head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, we are officially in 2024, and on New Year's Eve, we had a really good Bears game.
We did. And, you know, first of all, Happy New Year to you and to all of our listeners out there. Let's let 2024 be a good one. Definitely. I think that was one of the more fun Bears games we've watched, not only this year, but over the past few years, for a number of reasons. Now, I'm going to say this. You know me as the very pro, let's get a nice domed stadium, right? You know, we've talked about that on this show multiple times, but I got to say, having that snowy meatball voice bear weather kind of made it a little extra fun too. Not gonna lie, it was kind of a fun little aesthetic to see.
Yeah, you know, because it wasn't like Arctic cold and, you know, a foot of snow on the ground. It was flurries, which made it look cool.
Right, and it was one of those things where you had the snow, and it was obviously late December. It was New Year's Eve, and in years past, we've seen that turf look just beyond terrible. And yesterday, you compare how the turf looked yesterday to other years, it looks pretty good for what we're used to at Soldier Field.
Oh, it looked actually really good. That Bermuda grass that they put in is working out exceptionally well.
Yeah, I mean, compare it to what they used to. Did they used to go to Kentucky bluegrass before? Was that what it was?
Yeah, Kentucky bluegrass.
I mean, that's basically playing in a Chicago person's front yard in December. You know, you're not playing on as durable turf, where this turf looks pretty good. I mean, especially for Soldier Field.
Because you know what? Because they've been using like old-fashioned bluegrass that's, you know, but they got an actual like engineered type of grass that was designed to have a big root mass, so it doesn't just uproot.
Right. You don't see the slipping and sliding like you used to.
Yeah. It was actually developed at a college to be great along weather tolerance and have quick recovery. And we had use of this in an NFL stadium. So so we've seen this work. So it's grass that's meant to hold up. So we used modern grass.
Yeah, isn't that nice for once? Because you remember too, you would see, even if somebody didn't necessarily slip and fall, you would see running on the turf, and you would just see the chunks come flying out and the mud being exposed underneath. And you're not really seeing that now. And the other thing, too, is by this time of the year, in normal years, when we use that old Kentucky bluegrass, you would really see how faded the logos in the end zones and in the center of the field became, where, you know, they're still showing up pretty bright, pretty clear with this new turf. So, you know, it's something I didn't really even think about initially, but then I as I'm watching the game, I'm like, oh, you know, that turf is looking pretty good for late December, for the last home game of the year.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed. You know, when they said that they were changing the grass, I was like, oh, okay, whatever. But actually going with something modern made a lot of sense. And I know it's the Chicago Park District that maintains this, but you know, the Bears actually having input and working collaboratively, this worked out.
Yeah, and they didn't
score one Ryan Poles.
Yeah, they didn't go the other way where they said, "Oh, let's just do some Scott's feed your lawn over the whole thing."
Chunks come up and you see a guy roll out with that little cart with seeds.
Quick, plant and grow.
So, you know, I felt going into this game, I did feel confident because I've, you know, came down to the quarterback. Atlanta has a really good defense. They're a top 10 defense in the NFL. And the offense, they've got a lot of weapons. Drake London's a good wide receiver. Bijan Robinson's a really good running back. And their tight end is exceptionally good. It came down to the quarterback. And I was like, I feel against, you know, two good defenses and two offenses that are hit or miss, I feel confident that Justin Fields will get this done. But, you know, but what we saw was really impressive. Justin Fields went against a really good defense and looked really good. And it would have looked much better if Tyler Scott didn't suck.
Yeah. I can confidently say this game that Justin Fields balled out. And because you can look at those final numbers and say, oh, those are good. Had Scott caught that absolute dime he threw to him, they would have looked even better. I mean, that throw, that deep ball to Scott, that was as good of a football as a quarterback can throw.
He had two drop touchdowns.
He did. The one that was forced out of bounds and barely out of bounds, and then that one. And, you know, again, it didn't matter because the Bears won by a lot, but I was selfishly wanting to see, you know, a better stat line for Justin Fields that he deserved. The final stat line is still very good, but again, it could have been even better. And I can guarantee you, DJ Moore, Marvin Harrison, that deep ball to Scott, they're catching that. I mean, DJ Moore was, he's been doing it all year, but he was really feeling it yesterday.
Yeah, Justin Fields ended up with 268 yards passing, a touchdown, no interceptions, a 99.5 quarterback rating, and 45 yards rushing it and a touchdown on the ground.
Now,
that's a pretty darn good game.
It is, the rushing. It wasn't the yards that you look at the rushing. It's that play.
Mm-hmm.
That how does he do that?
And I want to step back for a second, is, you know, because I'm going to shit on Jordan Love real quick.
Oh boy.
Jordan Love has looked really good at times, but when he faces any sort of defense, he folds like a house of cards. And Justin Fields went into against this Atlanta team. This is what their defensive ranks were going into the game. Points per game, 6th in the NFL. Yards allowed per game, 9th in the NFL. Touchdowns allowed in 2nd in the NFL. Opponents' red zone conversion rate, 1st in the NFL. Opponents' third down conversion rate, 3rd in the NFL. Passing yards allowed per game, 8th. And the Bears put 37 points, 432 yards, 4 touchdowns, 4 of 5 in the red zone, 6 for 16 on third downs, and 240 passing yards.
Well, you know what was really impressive for me is the Falcons are like the most efficient team in the NFL in red zone defense. And when the Bears got to the red zone, this was not one of those games that kept selling for field goals. They got in.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was a lot of times where Luke Getsy's play calling just made me want to punch him in the face. Like after Atlanta scored that touchdown on the screen pass, everybody in the world knew that the Bears were going to the screen pass next series.
Yeah. That was my biggest problem with Getsy yesterday. Obviously that first drive looked very good as it usually does. But yeah, that was, that was like, oh God, here we go with this scared play calling again. And that was probably my least favorite part offensively of the game. But, obviously.
Fields saved him with some exceptional plays. And I know you were about to say it and I interrupted. So go for it on the play.
The play, yes. He should have been sacked twice. And for a massive loss. A massive, massive loss. I mean, if you go back and watch, he snaps. Oye gets a hold of him. The 90 has him at his legs. He's tumbling down. Then two more linemen come circling in on him as he's stumbling. And he just gets up and runs. Like, I can say what you want about Justin Fields. He might not be the best quarterback in the NFL, but I don't think there's any other quarterback that's doing that. No. I don't think there is a single quarterback. I don't think Pat Mahomes is doing that. No. I'm not saying Fields is better than Mahomes, but I'm saying that he's not doing that.
There's things that Justin Fields does that nobody else can do. And that those two plays were, you know, that's it. That's what he does. And that's the thing that he just excels at. And he had that Atlanta team thinking they had a sack and they wrapped him up. They were going to get the ball back. And he not only broke that, but, you know, broke those tackles, avoided the sack. He ran for what was a 15 yards for a first down.
Mm-hmm.
And that just broke Atlanta's back. That what do you do? What do you do if you're the defense?
Yeah, I mean, that was like a glitch in a video game or something. That was absolutely unreal. We've seen him make that play multiple times, and they've been insanely impressive. I mean, remember the one his rookie year against the 49ers, and he did that a few times last year. That might have been the craziest play he's made with his legs while avoiding a sack. Like, I still watch that, and I have absolutely no idea how he got out of that.
Yeah, and some of those throws he made were just exceptional, like that touchdown to DJ Moore.
And the beautiful, beautiful throw. I mean, it couldn't have been more perfectly placed.
Yeah, I was absolutely impressed.
You know what I liked, too, about Justin Fields? He hit on the deep balls, but he also wasn't afraid to take a few checkdowns in the game, and they were able to move the chains because of that.
Yeah. Yep. It was not only did he have some exceptional throws and some exceptional, scrambles to avoid sack and pick up yards, is that they efficiently moved the chains and they were efficient in the red zone. And it was as good of a game as I've seen him play.
He
scored more touchdowns. He's had games where he's made flashier plays. This was such a complete game. You're like, I don't know how people watched that game and are still saying Caleb Williams. I don't know how you do that.
And like, you think about it too, like even in some of Justin Fields' better games, you say, okay, this was all good. Here is where kind of the bad things happened or where you saw a string of struggles. The only really notable thing I can think of from Justin Fields in this game is like he overthrew, I don't know, I couldn't remember
Tyler
if
Scott.
It was Scott. He overthrew him like once.
Yeah. That one was you're like, okay, that was a bad throw, but
every quarterback's gonna have a missed throw in a game.
Mm-hmm. I think this game did nothing but cement the fact that Justin Fields is the quarterback going forward.
I mean, like you said, he didn't do it against some no-name defense, because people can easily look at Atlanta and be like, oh, they suck. I mean, it's like, listen, like you said, it really feels like they just need a quarterback.
Yeah, I kept saying that during the game. I was like, if this team had a quarterback, I mean, I know everybody's been shitting on their head coach, but it's when you don't have a quarterback, man, it just makes everything just not work right. And they don't, you know, they tried going with the young guy Ritter and see what he could do, and he had
Yeah, not good.
some ups and downs, and then they benched him and went with Heinicke, who's a veteran, to try to get that jump start. And he had a what was it last week? He had a really good game, and then he came in this game and just looked like dog doo-doo. And at the end of the game, the Bears, what they do is they once they stop the run, they try to get the quarterback to they bait them into trying to throw interceptions, and Heinicke fell for it and started throwing interceptions. And
It felt like by the end of the game, he didn't know what the hell was going on. He was just chucking it.
I mean, he had a bad game, and you know, he didn't have a good game going into that, but by the second half, when the Bears had a lead, and he was trying to do things, it just the Bears were baiting him into to interceptions, and he wound up throwing three.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting when you watch the game because in the first half, it felt kind of like, and even in the second half too, for a bit, really, it was kind of some bend don't break you saw from the Bears because the Falcons did move the ball early on in the game, but the weather was not ideal for kicking, and Atlanta's kicker, Koo, who is very, very good, was impacted himself and he missed two field goals right off the bat. So, you know, they didn't get in the end zone, but they were moving the ball early on. And then, you know, second half comes. I mean, really, you look at the defense, the touchdowns they gave up, the Heinicke rush and that 75-yard screen pass. And the 75-yard screen pass, to me, I almost just looked at that and I'm like, you know what? They just executed that well, the Falcons did.
The Bears were way out of position, and they executed it. It was like lightning in a bottle, or you know, it was the perfect play for the defense that they had, and the Bears were really out of position, and it was frustrating. But yeah, honestly, you know, this game got out of hand kind of quick, and just think how much more could have been out of hand if Justin Jones didn't have a stupid penalty.
Yeah, because that Heinicke touchdown, that 35-yard rush was because of that. I mean, you look at that whole drive. First, you had a dropped pick by Tremaine Edmonds. That was a gimme. And then you had the stupid Justin Jones penalty because you had him stopped. And that allowed the drive to continue. And then they eventually scored. Obviously, it didn't cost them anything. But at the time when that touchdown scored, you said, okay, you know, you're still winning, but this is kind of a game now. And then obviously the Bears came in and just completely shut it down. But at the time, you're thinking, man, that could be a momentum swinger right there. And luckily it wasn't.
You know, so the you know the good things in this game, obviously Justin Fields. And there's one thing I want to talk about Justin Fields that's really frustrating, is why is everybody allowed to hit him late and they don't call the penalty?
He was hit twice. And then didn't Heinicke get hit and like he begged for a flag? And then like 5 seconds later, the refs actually
Oh
gave
my
it to
God,
him.
I think it was like 20 seconds. It was so late. It was shocking. And you know, I don't know what Justin Fields has to do to get these calls. The guy punched him in the head.
When he was already down.
Yeah, the NFL can't say that they're trying to protect players and then let people fall with all their weight on Fields, hit him late, punch him in the head when he's down. That it just it's mind-boggling.
Yeah. Because, I mean, here's the thing. You can make all the arguments of, oh, well, it wasn't intentional. It happened so fast, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, then why do you explain other quarterbacks getting calls for so much less than that?
It doesn't matter if it was an accident or not. He punched him in the head. You know, I'm not saying they throw him out of the game, but they've got to throw that flag.
Right. If you're going to call 10 times less for other quarterbacks, you got to even the playing field. I mean, you really do. And, you know, I feel like we have this conversation every week, but, you know, there were some calls in this game. Like, we know Lucas Patrick isn't very good, but you remember that holding call that he had on him?
That was not a holding call.
That was ticky-tacky. And honestly, there was a misholding call on the Falcon, on the Bears as well, that led to one of the touchdowns. So you're never going to get consistency from the officiating. And we all know the NFL officiating is a big topic of conversation this week.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I keep saying it is that the fact that the NFL is in bed with gambling.
Yep.
They have to be better about officiating. They have to
yep.
be.
Yep.
It's one and more so with consistency. Like, they can't be, well, he shoved him late, we're going to call it, but then this guy punched him in, well, it was an accident, we're going to look the other way. It has to be consistent. You have to know. I mean, at least the officiating figured out what a catch was, which is,
yeah, it doesn't seem like we've had much of a trouble with that this year.
But we've got to pass interference, holdings, late hits, like these things have to be uniform. They just have to be. And I keep saying it is the NFL needs to make these officials full-time officials, not allow them to have other jobs in the off season, but full-time officiating. And in the off season, they should be meeting and watching videos and having discussions, meeting with the league, figuring out like, all right, the league wants us to be like the hip drop tackles. Like if they want to move away from that, okay, so let's watch a lot of videos of these hip drop tackles and make sure that we're able to identify them and that we're making those calls. What are we calling it as? Is there a new penalty or is it, you know, like horse collar? Is it going to be its own penalty or are we going to, you know, call it, you know, personal foul? Like, what are we doing? Like, I just want them to watch. This is holding. This is not holding. This is pass interference. This is non-pass interference. So they all are on the same page.
Yeah, I agree. There's way too many merit stacks questions now with all this stuff.
Yeah. So, but the goods in this game, Justin Fields, really good. Khalil Herbert, really good.
Yeah, that's two good games in a row for him.
Yeah, it's finally starting to look good after being injured. DJ Moore obviously looked good.
Tyreek Stevenson.
Robert Tonyan actually looked good. His first time all season.
Yeah, that's nice.
Both rookie cornerbacks, Tyreek Stevenson and Terrell Smith, both looked good. Jalon Johnson looked good. Jervon Dexter, you know, when everybody was like, oh my God, I can't believe the Bears passed on Jalen Carter. Oh, that's the stupidest thing. When he's in the Hall of Fame, the Bears are gonna look so stupid. And Jervon Dexter, in, you know, ever since Flus took over play calling on defense, has really come on and he is looking good.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, you didn't see Montez Sweat get a sack, but you know what? You saw him getting pressure and, you know, they weren't getting home in this game like they were in other games. I mean, you know, you got some good pass protectors on Atlanta, but you saw late that some of that pressure that they applied was forcing Heinicke to just chuck the ball and make some bad throws. And Montez Sweat was part of that. So, no, you didn't go ballistic with sacks in this game, but you had a few and you were able to get some pressure late to really put things away.
Right. So that was good. The defensive line as a whole played really well. I was really happy. You know, if you're looking at the negatives, Nate Davis in that first half really struggled against Calais Campbell. In the second half, figured it out a little better, but that first half, man, Calais Campbell was stealing his lunch money.
Yeah.
And then obviously, Tyler Scott, just
yeah.
I'm annoyed with him.
The dime deep throw is the one that really bothers me. I mean, it's the one that was in the back of the end zone that was just out of bounds. Can an elite receiver stay in bounds? Yes, that's pretty hard. I mean, the Atlanta defender was right on him, but man, hang
He
on to
does.
that dime.
He did that kick out instead of putting his foot down. Like, you should be practicing these sideline catches. 2 feet down, 2 feet down, 2 feet down. Like, you've got to practice that. It's instinct. If you watch college receivers, they don't worry about that. They get their 1 foot out of bounds and they don't care.
Right.
In the pros, you've got to get both of those feet down. And the best wide receivers, they get those feet in inbounds. Tap, tap. Tap tap toe drag. He's got to do that. And then the other one just in his hands and out. Both of those Marvin Harrison Jr. comes down with.
Oh, for sure, no doubt.
And then in the I know some people will throw this in the negative column. I don't know if I do. That Velus Jones penalty, I think he just was stronger than that guy, because that guy came up and shoved him, and Velus Jones shoved him back and laid that dude out. Like, I can't be mad at that, because both guys are getting a little physical, and you know, the stronger one just laid the dude out. You know, should he have held up a little bit? Yeah, but I can't be mad at if you just level the cornerback.
There are plenty of reasons to be frustrated with Velus Jones. I think that's one of the things where I'm on the lesser end of being frustrated. So that just kind of was what it was.
Here's my thing with Velus Jones. I think at some point, whether it's the Bears or another team, is going to make him Cordarrelle Patterson 2.0, where he runs the, you know, he's a does running back plays, gadget plays, returns. I think that's what's going to happen. And you saw the Bears start to do that. They've had him do a few run plays here and there.
He has, yes.
I think that is where he's gonna be useful. It's just that, man, they've gotta put him in that spot and let him work at what he's gonna do, and I know that they're putting him at wide receiver more because you don't have anybody. It's you've got injuries here, but with Mooney out, so you're throwing passes to to running backs more than most any writers. If you take away DJ Moore, he completed passes to Tyler Scott and that rookie that they brought up from the practice squad, Colin Johnson, got that one nice catch. But other than that, every pass was to a tight end or a running back.
Yep.
But I do want to say that Colin Johnson already looks better than Tyler Scott. And he's a big dude.
Yeah.
6'6", 220. I hope that he gets a chance next week too to play, and they let him. I want to see what he can do.
Yeah, I'd be curious too as well.
You know, having a big receiver like that is nice, because they don't have one. They have Equanimeous St. Brown, I guess, but he doesn't catch many passes.
No, he's the blocker out there.
Yeah. I mean,
he's very good at it, but yeah, you're not going to target Equanimeous St. Brown in many situations, unless you're the tanking team last year where you were literally down to Equanimeous St. Brown as your number one wide receiver.
Yeah, but Tyler Scott is sub 6 foot, sub 200 pounds. That's not a big dude.
No.
DJ Moore is sub 6 foot, but he's stocky.
And really fucking good at tracking the ball.
Yeah, he is.
He's like a gold glove outfielder out there. I mean, you remember that catch where he stuck his hands out and was like looking upwards, like behind his back?
Mm-hmm.
That was just a thing of beauty. It's like, you know, that's a lot harder than it looks.
But there was one funny thing the announcer said is he just goes, Matt Eberflus knows what he's doing. And I think every Bears fan went, the fuck?
Which that is a topic of conversation I'm sure we'll get to.
Yeah. But I mean, overall, the game was a really well played game. You know, even though Atlanta's offense is not that good, their defense is really good and they've got a lot of weapons, and you shut them down. You prevented Bijan Robinson from getting 100 yards rushing.
Yep.
You limited their tight end. You their number one wide receiver, you limited him to what, 56 yards. Kyle Pitts had one catch for 5 yards. Bijan Robinson had 3 catches for 11 yards and 75 yards rushing. So you really just contained the good weapons that they had, and you forced their quarterback to make plays, and he just couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And your offense was just really efficient and hit some big plays. I just put it away. Yeah.
When you had them at their throats, you put them away.
Yep. So I can't be mad at anything in this game.
Can we talk about one thing real quick? I want to share some stats.
Sure.
So DJ Moore, we're talking about all the good things that came in this game. We saw DJ Moore. He now officially has a career high in receiving yards and touchdowns. And remember, the last 2 years, he played in all 17 games. So after 16 games in Chicago, he's eclipsed his career high in yards, touchdown catches, and assuming he gets 2 catches next week in the finale, he will surpass his career high in recorded catches. He's had a Pro Bowl season.
Yes, he has.
I mean, 1,300 receiving yards and 8 touchdowns. You don't see Bears receivers having those kinds of seasons often.
Nope. You had Allen Robinson do it that 1 year. Looked really good. But yeah.
Brandon Marshall and Jeffrey, other than that.
Yeah. This dude is the real deal.
And, you know, he doesn't always have to make the flashy Odell Beckham Jr. type plays. He's just so efficient at what he does. Well, like I said, the catch he made looking over, like looking behind his back and sticking his arms out like he's an old-timey outfielder fielding a fly ball going to the warning track. Like, tracking those types of balls is a lot harder than it looks, especially in bad weather like that.
Yep, and the only thing that stops that dude is Luke Getsy.
Yeah, remember the season opener when he had, like, 2 catches for, like, 20 yards?
Two for 25. Or last week when he had 3 catches for 18 yards.
To be fair, he was kind of injured in that game.
True.
He was visibly banged up.
New Orleans, 3 catches for 44 yards. Like, Kansas City, 3 for 41. He is your best offensive playmaker. You got to get him the ball more. They've got to call plays where he gets the ball.
So yesterday's game was his best game outside the Washington game. Because obviously the Washington game, 3 touchdown catches and 230 yards. Yeah, it's going to be really hard to top that one. But, you know, yesterday against Atlanta, 159 yards against a good defense and a touchdown. That is very, very good. And then, you know, obviously it was a loss, but he had that great game against Denver, that awful blown game, 131 yards. So he's had, let's see, 5 games in which he's received 100 or more yards. And then in the loss to Detroit, he just missed with 96. So he's had a lot of productive games. And if there was a bit more consistency with Luke Getsy, he'd probably have even more.
Yep. In that game, even though the Bears won and they did the things they needed to do, with the Rams win, barely win, the Bears were eliminated from postseason play. And, you know, with the way that they've been playing the last several weeks, it's the way some of the teams that are in the playoffs are playing, you know, the 49ers and the Cowboys probably don't want to play, but the Lions, the Bucks, the Eagles, the Rams, I wouldn't be, maybe you won't, don't beat them, but I wouldn't be scared of them.
No, this is what frustrates me. The NFL is really mediocre and bad overall this year. It yeah. sucks you couldn't take advantage of that because you lost 3 historic games.
Yep. And, you know, if you had won those games that you had like a 90%+ odds of winning, like you're in the playoffs. And in fact, you know, you're probably, I don't like the 6th seed.
Yeah. No, I mean, hell, just win 2 or 3 of those.
Yeah, you're in the playoffs with 2 of the 3 of those.
Because you know what? Like, listen, in an NFL season, there's, you know, a lot of teams are going to have that one really bad loss. That happens in the NFL. But the one that bothers me more than any of them is that Detroit loss. That's a division rival against a division leader where if you win both those games, obviously Detroit's already clinched the division and they were probably going to win the division, but not only would you have had been vying for a playoff berth, you could have gotten back into the NFC North race. That's the loss to me that really, really hurts more than any of the others. Now, the Denver loss was probably the most insane because you had that massive, massive lead at home. But you know what? The defense still sucked. You didn't have Montez Sweat yet. Things weren't clicking yet. Things weren't where they are now. Because I can almost guarantee you this, Sean. I think if you play that matchup again, assuming Russell Wilson's playing, obviously he's not now, but if this version of the Bears was playing that Broncos team, I don't think they lose that game.
Oh, I think they win running away.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, it would have been similar to what you did to the Falcons. You would have won that game pretty handily, pretty easily. You know, the Browns game, that was really frustrating because with all the things that went wrong, if you just catch the damn ball on a number of occasions, you win the game. But it's, man, that Detroit loss, that might have been, that loss might have stung more than any other loss over the past few years.
Yeah, it really did stink.
So, say you beat Cleveland and Detroit. You have 9 wins right now. And, like you said, you look at some of the teams, and I'm not, this team's not going to win a Super Bowl this year, no matter what. Let's get that very, very clear. I mean, at the beginning of the year, I didn't even think they were going to win a game with how awful they started. I mean, I was as down as you could be on this team at the beginning of the year. They didn't look like an NFL team those past few the first few weeks of the season. They looked like they didn't even belong in the league. But with the way they've improved roster-wise, play-wise, and dare I say it, kind of coaching-wise, I think you could go to a Seattle or, hell, if the Vikings somehow squeaked in, you could beat them. Now,
what the playoffs are right now for the NFC, if the season ended today, 49ers, Cowboys, Lions, Bucks, Eagles, Rams, Packers. Seahawks, Saints, and Vikings are out.
So, okay, let's go through each of those again. I'm going to say 49ers are probably going to drop you.
Yes.
Cowboys, probably going to beat you.
In Dallas, they're definitely beating you. In neutral site or Chicago, I think they probably beat you, but man, they've had some stinkers.
Impossible.
They've had some stinker games.
Right. Yeah.
Lions, I think you beat them.
You should have beaten them twice.
Yeah, I think you beat them. Buccaneers,
you could
beat
them.
Played a really bad. We played a really bad game and they won. I think you beat the Buccaneers.
And we're talking about this version of the Bears, not week one, week two version of the Bears.
Yes, and that is going to hold true to the next one. This current Bears versus this current Eagles, Bears win. Those Eagles are looking bad.
Yeah, I mean, the way they lost to the Cardinals. You know, would I say it's a foregone conclusion? Obviously not, and I know you wouldn't either, but I don't think it would be far-fetched to win it.
No, I mean, they almost lost to the Giants.
That's true. That's true.
If it would have been Tyrod Taylor at quarterback instead of, pasta meatball, the Giants win that game.
Right.
So the Eagles, man, are just really struggling. Rams right now versus Bears. I think it's a tough one. The Rams are starting to turn it on too.
Matt Stafford's looking pretty good.
Yeah, and that 1-2 combination of Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua.
Yeah, that's tough.
Good. Yeah.
I would love to see the Lions host the Rams. Matt Stafford goes to his old stompy grounds in the playoffs. Wouldn't that be a fun matchup?
That would be really fun.
I would love that. I would definitely sit down to watch that one.
And then Packers. We'll see. We'll see next week.
Until they prove otherwise, I'll just always expect the worst from Green Bay.
You know, I say the same thing. It's until they do it, they can't do it.
Because you know what? Here's the thing. We can debate about Jordan Love, how good he really is or not. But Matt LaFleur coaches circles around Matt Eberflus.
Absolutely.
And Matt LaFleur has a scheme that makes Jordan Love work. He gets those guys open, and if Jordan Love can hit them, things will work. And that is an indictment of a great coach.
It's for the Bears, they're going to have to get pressure on Jordan Love.
Right.
That's just it. They got to have pressure.
Sean, here's my whole thing with this. How I feel about the Bears going forward, I feel like more of this is going to hinge on this Green Bay than I expected to. Because if they go in there and Jordan Love just rips you a new one, you end the season feeling like, well, same old story. You're getting owned by the team in the North. And now you have a third straight quarterback that's going to be doing it to you for 15, 20 years. You don't want that feeling.
Yeah, and I think it's going to start with, mark my words, can the Bears stop Aaron Jones?
Mm-hmm.
If Aaron Jones is running 6 yards a carry like he did against the Vikings, it's going to be a long day for the Bears, because once that run gets going, that Jordan Love starts getting going. Yeah. If you can stop that run and then force them into passing downs, get pressure on Jordan Love, you're gonna watch with the Jordan Love that played against the Raiders.
Right. Right.
It's
Yeah, you got to stop the run. Absolutely.
Yep. Absolutely. Is Aaron Jones? He can't have 120 yards rushing against you. Just can't happen.
No, you can't. You know, obviously the Packers have more to lose than the Bears. We're out. They can clinch a playoff spot.
How good would it feel if we knocked them out of the playoffs?
Oh, I mean, it would be great. It would be great. We'll see though. I'm not overly confident. I can't. There was one time over the past decade where I had confidence going to a Bears Packers. No. Let me say that again. Twice. And they're 1-1. I don't know if you know what games I'm thinking of.
I'm gonna say the NFC Championship game.
No. We're a little past the decade now.
Oh God, yeah. 2018.
Yeah, 2018 when they beat the Packers to win the North. Because the arrow was pointing to, I mean, that was the one year where everything was going right for the Bears and everything was going wrong for the Packers. And you just, that was the one time I really felt against Aaron Rodgers that it was their day. They were going to take it, and they did. The other time I felt good about a Bears-Packers matchup that didn't turn out good was the year before in 2017 when they lost to Brett Hundley at home.
Oh God. God,
that was the Benny Cunningham fumbled at the pylon. John Fox won the challenge but lost the ball.
Oh God.
So here's the thing, Sean. If this wasn't the Packers, if we were just looking on paper against whatever team we were playing, we weren't looking at the venue or the logos on the uniforms and helmets. On paper, I'd say, yeah, that's a beatable. The Bears can win that game.
Yep.
But add in the circumstances, I don't know. I don't feel very confident. I don't want to go into the season getting trounced by them again and having that feeling of, well, Jordan Love now owns us. I don't want that. If you're going to lose, lose a tight one that's kind of a half defensive, half offensive battle where, you know what, you're battling them toe to toe and Aaron Jones breaks off a massive run and you lose by like a field goal. And it's where Jordan Love just doesn't completely torch you. I could live with that more than just getting blown out again.
I just want Jordan Love to throw a pick six so bad.
Oh, so do I.
So here's the current playoff bracket in the NFC. San Francisco has the bye, and they'll play the lowest seed in round two. Round one, it would be Tampa Bay versus Philly, Detroit versus the Rams, and Dallas versus Green Bay. And mind you, Dallas hasn't lost in Dallas in 2 years.
Well, get the Aaron Rodgers magic, because Aaron Rodgers always beat them in Dallas. He always beat them, period.
Yeah.
So, will that transfer over? I don't know.
I don't know. It would be funny to watch Mike McCarthy beat the Packers.
Mike McCarthy, man. I mean, the way he constructs an offense, he's excellent at it, but as a head coach, his clock management is the most mind-boggling thing ever.
And I don't understand how a coach can be bad at that, because you could have an assistant coach that's their job. Hey, you know, keep me honest with the clock. Like that's you have an assistant.
I mean, that bad call against the Lions on the 2-point conversion, had Mike McCarthy been normal, that would never have happened, because Dallas would have put that game away. What was it, right? Second down, when he Dak gets the snap and he just heaves it out of bounds, stopping the clock. And it's like, what are you doing? And listen, Detroit was stopping the run very efficiently that game. But at the very least, you make Detroit take all their timeouts, you burn more clock, and you pin them deep. And if you're still in field goal range and you kick a long field goal, you kick that field goal with a lot less time left. I mean, they gave them essentially an extra timeout because of that stupidity. I'm like, you've been a head coach since the mid-2000s. You've won a Super Bowl. You've been to the playoffs a million times. How are you still so bad at this? I don't get it. I don't know. It's mind-boggling. I mean, part of me thinks it's arrogance, frankly. That's just my opinion.
I'm looking at the line. The Packers are only favored by 3.
I'm not surprised. I think it'll be a close betting line.
Darnell Mooney is already out. Christian Watson is doubtful. Luke Musgrave is doubtful. Lucas Patrick is questionable. Cole Kmet is questionable. I think Kmet will play. I don't know if Lucas Patrick plays.
Well,
I don't know if we're missing him if he does or doesn't.
We'll see. I don't know. I just don't want to lose them again in bad fashion, even if it doesn't mean anything for us.
So the last couple things of the Bears that I want to discuss, see if there's anything else you want to discuss. A report came out, I think it was Ian Rappaport, that said the Bears are likely to keep Matt Eberflus next season. And I'm honestly not shocked.
And I also do think people should read the quote too. Just saying.
Yeah, I'm not, I mean, anything can happen, but I've been saying that, you know, since he took over as defensive coordinator, things have gotten a whole lot better. That locker room never quit on him. And the defensive players love him. And there's a lot of gaffes in his head coaching-ness. I really hate that he never takes responsibility as a head coach. And it's always the coaching did right. I mean, even what was it the other day I was listening to him and he's like, you know, he's like, success starts with coaching. And I was like, did he just say that? So it annoys me that he does that. And there's a lot of coaching gaffes, but you know, the changing when things are going well isn't always good. So I can understand if they keep him. I just don't see how they can bring Getsy and Fields back together. Because my question is, Poles hired Eberflus, and they sat down and they talked about their potential coordinators. Did they decide, how is this guy going Justin Fields better? And I just don't know how they came up with Luke Getsy. And I don't know how Luke Getsy comes back.
I mean,
my feeling is Fields will be back, Flus will be back, and Poles will go to Flus and say, you've got to let Luke Getsy go if you want to stay head coach.
You think so?
I think so.
Luke Getsy can't be the OC next year.
No.
Can't be calling plays. That's a big deal breaker for me. With Matt Eberflus, I've been very much on the "you have to move on" train.
And I get it. I there's a lot of reasons that he should lose his job, and there's three really notable ones.
Right. And
those three epic losses, this collapses. Those
being unprepared, in addition to those at
yep.
the beginning of the season. How unbelievable! I mean, the fact that look, I'm not going to get on him for his overall record because you were tanking last year. We understood that. Okay, you know, we get that. You had the three epic losses this year. You were unprepared to start the year. And I know people don't always like when I use this type of example, but the Lions are like the one winning team you've beaten. And listen, Atlanta, you know, they don't have a quarterback, but if they had a quarterback, they would be a legit team, and you beat them pretty good. That was well done. But can I trust Matt Eberflus going forward to beat the big teams? I mean, when you went up against Andy Reid, you didn't even look like you belonged in the same league.
No, you did not look prepared. And another thing I'm going to throw in there in the he should be fired category is he has been abysmal at his coaching staff.
Right.
Is you have to attach firmly to Luke Getsy. You have to attach to him the Alan Williams.
Mm-hmm.
He brought Alan Williams in. That was his guy. And that was not only did he get fired for something that we'll maybe never know, but how bad was the defense under him?
Awful.
It was atrocious. And that has to be tacked firmly to him. The hiring of Luke Getsy has to firmly be tacked to Matt Eberflus. Didn't another assistant coach get fired for HR violation?
Yes. Yes, he did.
That's attached to, you had two in the same year, assistant coaches get fired for HR violations. You brought those guys in. They were your dudes. And that, you know, those get added on to the why he should be fired. There's absolutely reason to fire him. There's absolute reason to keep him. It's this, the second half of this season has really made this a harder decision than we thought it was going to be.
It has, because, I mean, listen, you can also say this too. You know, obviously we talked about the defense being a lot better. The team looks legitimately energized out there. I mean, this is not Mark Trestman where, now I know this is going to sound contradictory because we mentioned the two coordinators that had to go, but I think with those guys gone and with the way they're playing now, I do think the culture around this team seems stronger than it was at the beginning of the year. Like, you see a lot of emotion out there and you see them playing hard, and, you know, I know it's cliche and everything, but it seems like there's some things that are starting to gel, and you can argue you don't want to mess with that. And that if you do want to keep Justin Fields, you don't give him a third head coach. So again, there's no real fully easy answer here, but the other thing that does make it difficult is that in terms of coaching candidates, I don't know how much there's really going to be available. And I can guarantee you that they're not going to hire Jim Harbaugh.
No.
So
Jim Harbaugh better win today. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. So here's kind of how I'm seeing this. I don't want the coaching staff to be back. I don't want it to. But I think it will be. And even though I'm not a fan of it, it is what it is. I don't want to say it is what it is, but I don't know how I put it delicately. Like, I don't want to just say, oh yeah, oh well, it's not going to mean anything. It's going to mean a lot. And it could end up being a mistake, a huge mistake. Or maybe it doesn't end up being as bad as we think. I'll just have to accept the fact that they're going to do that if they do indeed do that. I don't know what else to say, really.
Yeah, here's the list of the top potential candidates. Lou Anarumo, the defensive coordinator for the Bengals. And I'm going to say, if you're the Bears, you can't fire a defensive coach that's coaching well and bring in another defensive coach. I think that's a disaster.
No.
Eric Bieniemy, the offensive coordinator for Washington. This one I could see, because you look at the night and day difference, Eric Bieniemy, what that Washington offense looked like without him and with him. With he returns at the halfway point in the NFL season, Sam Howell was the NFL passing leader in yards.
Mm-hmm.
So he's playing with no quarterbacks, and they have a halfway decent offense, and you see how bad the Chiefs have been without him.
Yep.
Because they kept, you know, even it's not just play calling, is the reports are that he held all of those players to be an offense to be accountable. And that helped make them better. Next one, Ejiro Evero, the defensive coordinator for the Panthers. Again, you can't go defensive coordinator.
No.
Brian Flores, defensive coordinator of the Vikings. You can't go defensive coordinator. Aaron Glenn, defensive coordinator, Lions. Nope. Jim Harbaugh.
I want the other coordinator from the Lions.
Ben Johnson, offensive coordinator, Detroit Lions. Now, that's an interesting one, but how is he going to be as a head coach?
I don't know.
Brian Johnson, the offensive coordinator for the Eagles. Here's one I just want to shoot down because I'm not interested at all. Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator for the Chargers. Raheem Morris, defensive coordinator for the Rams. Really good coordinator. No. Antonio Pierce, the interim head coach of the Vegas Raiders. I think he's going to get that job. The full-time. Dan Quinn, defensive coordinator, Dallas. Nope. Steve Wilks, defensive coordinator, 49ers. Nope. Bobby Slovic, the offensive coordinator for Texans. He's a first-year play caller. I don't think so. So really, your three options are Brian Johnson, the offensive coordinator for the Eagles, Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator for the Lions, and Eric Bieniemy, the offensive coordinator for the Washington team.
I have a quick quote coaching question for you.
Okay.
Let's say Matt Eberflus stays, but Luke Getsy goes. How would you feel about Frank Reich as the OC?
I wouldn't hate it, but I don't know if I would love it.
I'm intrigued. Because you know what? I think he got a raw deal with Carolina.
He did. On so many accounts. I mean, the first one is you threw him under the bus and didn't let him draft the guy he wanted to draft.
We take Frank Reich, okay? And then we literally get a bus, okay? And then throw Frank Reich under the bus.
That was a bad one. And then the fact that you're seeing how bad they are without him. They're sure they got a win, but they've looked bad.
Didn't they win like 10-9 or something?
Yeah. I mean, they got destroyed by Jacksonville with a backup quarterback,
which helped us get what's probably going to be our last topic of conversation on the Bears. Yes.
And then I'm going to throw one more name out there. I guess it's a possibility. Two more. These are probably not in the realm of reality, but there's a distant chance. Two names: Mike Tomlin and Bill Belichick.
I don't see any way that Bill Belichick comes here.
I mean, I don't know if he's back, to be honest with you.
He should just retire, frankly. That's my opinion.
He's one of those guys, like, what's he going to do?
Nothing. Live with his millions that he's made.
He makes a lot of money because he's their GM, too.
Right.
So he makes a lot of money. So he's set for life.
Now, Mike Tomlin, yes, please. Mike Tomlin, he is literally the epitome of I can take crap and make it competitive.
So here are potential coordinators for both offense and defense that that could be available. Ken Dorsey, the former Bills offensive coordinator, and he got fired. I don't know if you need to think about that. Brian Griese, the 49ers quarterbacks coach.
As in former Bear Brian Griese?
Yes. Son of Bob Griese. This one is an interesting one to me. Jerod Johnson, the Texans quarterbacks coach. Clint Kubiak, the 49ers passing game specialist.
Any relation to the other Kubiak?
Gary Kubiak? Yes.
Yeah.
I believe that's his son.
Huh.
The Rams quarterbacks coach, Zach Robinson. So those are potential offensive coordinators. And then on defense, you've had the Marquand Manuel, who was a former player. He's the Jets safeties coach. Joe Witt Jr., the Cowboys defensive pass game coordinator. Aiden Durty, the Dallas Cowboys defensive line coach. Anthony Weaver, the Ravens defensive line coach. Chris Kocurek, the 49ers defensive line coach. DeMarcus Covington, the Patriots defensive line coach. Jesse Minter, the Michigan Wolverine defensive coordinator. And Leslie Frazier, the former Bills defensive coordinator.
And former Bear champion.
Fact.
Former Vikings head coach. That Leslie Frazier was part of them 85 Bears.
Yeah, so that's I don't know. My feeling though is Getsy goes and Eberflus and Fields stay.
If you're able to put together like a legitimately great staff and Eberflus can focus just being the CEO of the team again, I think you could do worse. Is it still my first choice? No, but I think you could do worse. Because I do wonder how hard it is for Eberflus to wear two hats, being the OC and being the head coach. That can't be easy.
I'm going to throw one more name in the ring. And I don't know if, based on his age, if he wants to do it. Jim Caldwell.
I like Jim Caldwell. I know I don't care what other people say. I like Jim Caldwell.
I like the fact that you would bring in a former head coach who had some success based on the team.
And you've seen the quarterbacks he's worked with.
Yeah.
He's worked with Peyton Manning and Matt Stafford.
I think that he would I think he would be good.
I kind of wanted them to hire him back before they hired Eberflus. Frankly,
yeah,
I would
me
have
too.
if they would have hired him as a head coach, I would have been okay with that. Even if it was kind of just like a, hey, you know what? You're going to come in here for maybe 2-3 years. You're going to get this thing going. But you know what? Had they hired Jim Caldwell, I don't know if that tank happens and they get this draft capital and trade ammo. I don't know.
He also coached Joe Flacco.
That's true. Look what he's doing with the Browns. Who the hell could have seen that?
Yeah, I love it. I hated Joe Flacco as a player, but did you hear the Wani story about Joe Flacco?
No.
All right. Do you know what college Joe Flacco played for when he was drafted?
Honestly, I don't.
He was a Delaware Fighting Blue Hen. Do you know why he played at University of Delaware, which is
What?
not a Division I? It's a Division II school. Do you know why he played there?
No.
He was at Pitt when Wani was there. He wanted to transfer out. Wani told him no. He wasn't allowed to. So he left. And the rules back then, now you can transfer and play somewhere else. The rules then, you had to sit out a year if you wanted to play another Division I school. So he went to Division II.
Interesting.
And I know the story to be true because it came from Wani. He was on the Parker and Spiegel show, and he said that story the other week. I was like, huh. And he's like, yeah, he's like, he probably wasn't happy with me at the time, but we're fine now.
Hey, you're Joe Flacco. You've had a career revitalization. You've already won a Super Bowl. How could you still be salty, you know?
Right. Let's see, who is this? He was also the quarterback's coach for the Buccaneers. Who was his quarterback that year? 2001.
You're still talking about Caldwell, right?
Yeah.
2001, the
Brad
Buccaneers.
Johnson. Brad Johnson.
The Brad Johnson.
So he took, I mean, I'm actually impressed because he took a crappy quarterback and made him good. He was with Peyton Manning.
Matt Stafford
Joe
thrived
Flacco.
under him.
Yeah. And he was with Tua.
Oh, there you go. See, impressive resume.
Yeah, so I'm just throwing that out there as a dark horse.
I would be okay with that.
And what I also like is it's a former head coach.
Mm-hmm.
So it's somebody that that Eberflus can bounce things off of, where he's like, this guy's like, hey, I've been in this role. I've been a head coach. And
he's coaching the playoffs. He's coaching a Super Bowl.
Yep. And he was head coach for the Colts, and he was the head coach for the Lions. And, you know, he can be like, hey, here's things that worked. Here's things that didn't work. And it takes pressure off of you. You feel confident that that's your dude. He's been around. He's been in the NFL. Coaching in the NFL since 2001. So almost as long as Justin Fields has been alive, this dude has been working with quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Quarterback coach in 2001, quarterback coach and assistant head coach 2002 to 2008, head coach 09 to 11, quarterback coach 2012, interim offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach 2012. Offensive coordinator 2013, head coach 2014 to 2017, assistant head coach and quarterback coach 2019, and then Now he's an assistant with the Panthers. Not a coach, assistant coach. He's just like a special assistant advisor.
Kind of like what John Fox is doing with the Lions.
Yeah. So I'd be okay with that.
Me too.
The last thing I wanted to bring up was we locked up officially with the Panthers loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars is the Bears officially are on the clock with the number one pick.
Yep. Boy, does it feel good.
And the announcers in the game said it was because the Cardinals won, but it didn't matter. If the Panthers lost, they were number one, no matter what the Cardinals did.
And the Cardinals winning could bode well for the Bears too.
Yeah, because they're probably not taking a quarterback. So that means if you were to trade back with one of those quarterback needy teams, you could still jump them and get Marvin Harrison Jr.
Exactly.
Also, you know, if Arizona was two, there could have been teams that used that team as leverage and be like, okay, we know if we don't want to pay what it takes to get up to number one, we could get up to number two and get the second pick and get another good player, even if it's not the guy we wanted necessarily, but we still get up to two for cheaper. You're not going to leapfrog Washington and New England for a quarterback. So if you want the quarterback, you want not the fourth choice, you got to come to the Bears.
Mm-hmm. Ryan Poles is going to be sitting in his office just cooking. Well, what do we have here? As he watches the phone start to ring.
Mm-hmm.
And you've cooked once, cook again.
Yeah, and I think you're going to have... I think you're going to get a similar haul.
Could you imagine? I mean, listen, this trade with the Panthers is looking like one of the all-time Chicago sports fleeces in a good way.
Yes. And even better than that is Lovie Smith directly attributed to the Bears getting two consecutive number one overall picks.
Yep.
And the hauls that are with them. Thank you, Lovie. They should build a statue of Lovie. If the Bears win a Super Bowl with this, you know, in these next few years, they need to build a statue of Lovie because he directly contributed to it.
Lovie Smith won you Super Bowl? I thought the Colts won. No, that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, we're talking about winning a game with the Houston Texans and giving the Bears number one so they could trade that. And then, and you know, honestly, it worked out well for Texans. They can't be mad anymore because they got the right quarterback and they got an edge rusher. Both look really good.
Yeah.
So, you know, now it's just going to be where the Bears are going to pick because I think it's silly. I look at the quarterbacks in this draft. You know, your Caleb Williams, your Drake Mays, your Jaden Daniels, your what's his name? Penix from the Washington, Bo Nix. They're all flawed. They're all flawed. There's not a guy that you're, you know, Caleb Williams last year at this time, people were like, oh my God, that's a generational dude. You took away those.
A lot more hesitant now.
I'm just going to say this from without sitting down to really watch it. Three things make me hesitant. One, the production when he didn't have elite wide receivers like he did last year dropped significantly.
Mm-hmm.
Two, his record against really good teams or good defenses didn't look so good.
Nope.
And three, he sat out the bowl game and his backup lit it up. So, I'm hesitant about him, you know.
I have my reservations too. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, Drake May. you know, he looks all right. Jaden Daniels, I don't know. He was really good at LSU. I just don't see project his game that much. I mean, I haven't sat down to watch a ton of him, but I just don't quite project it in the NFL. Penix is little. And then Bo Nix old. It's like, no, he's 24. It's not too old.
Old.
I thought he was a couple years older. I thought he was like 25. And we all know how we feel about drafting 25-year-olds in this town.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not in love with any of these quarterbacks. I think it's going to be pretty easy to keep Justin Fields and you trade. And honestly, I love Marvin Harrison Jr. There's a whole lot of really good wide receivers.
Yep.
In this first round, I'm going to guess 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm going to say 6 or 7 wide receivers in this first round.
Yeah, I mean, it's not slim pickings. There's a lot out there. And I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. is obviously the one I want first and foremost, as we should. And again, our best case scenario is we drop just a few slots and we're still able to get him, even if we trade down and we get another haul of picks, maybe even a player in addition. But again, just like we said last year, there's comfort in knowing that the possibilities are endless.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good options there. And you know, I love Marvin Harrison Jr. I really like Malik Nabers. He reminds me of Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of the other one that's slipping more and more into the conversation, because Marvin Harrison Jr. has always been kind of the shiny toy of this draft in terms of receivers, but Nabers is pretty damn good too.
Yeah, he's undersized. Like, Marvin Harrison is really good, and that height, that 6'4", just...
Which is why I still put him first, because I think it'd be nice to have a guy that just has size.
I'm going to say is his size is really good. He's done nothing to take himself out of being the number one wide receiver. I really like Malik Nabers.
Yeah, that's fair.
But honestly, I'm not that concerned if the Bears trade, you know, fairly significantly back. I mean, if they trade back to like 10 or 11, like there's some really good players still based on what, I mean, we're, God, 4.5 months away from the draft, 5 months away, whatever. 4 months away. The way the draft is looking like it's going to fall now is early on, a lot of quarterbacks, a wide receiver or two, and a bunch of offensive linemen. If you trade back, you know, I still, as much as you could say that you could move away from Braxton Jones, I still think that's a luxury. Like, if you want to draft somebody in the second or third, fine. I don't know if you can draft offensive tackles in back-to-back drafts when there's other needs. The edge rushers are where you're going to start seeing them come off the board around 10. And that's, I think, where you want to get the best edge rusher. And
using your actual pick.
I mean, even if you trade back to around that point, so you've got, you know, basically to pick 10 and 11 or pick 9 and 10, then you still are going to get a really good wide receiver and possibly the best edge rusher. And I think those are the two spots that you should go in.
Mm-hmm.
I know there are people that out there like, what about Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia? He's really good. I just still think that's a luxury pick.
Right.
You know, there's going to be a couple cornerbacks that are here. I don't think you can go first round cornerback, especially since I think they're going to bring Jalen Johnson back, either extension or franchise tag. And you've got three really good cornerbacks outside of Jalen Johnson. I think that's silly. So those are the first round caliber players. Is an elite playmaking tight end, a tackle, a wide receiver, quarterback, cornerback. So I really think they're gonna go wide receiver edge. I just really do.
I could see it. I have no reason to say that's wrong or that doesn't make any sense. Because think about how good your rushing has been lately, getting to the quarterback. You add more young talent to that, then it could really be elite.
Man, this Michigan-Alabama game is about to go to overtime.
Yeah, I'm watching it. I have it on the TV right next to me.
I have it behind me, so I can't. I'm just turning around and looking. I'm a Michigan guy. That's my college team, so it's I really want them to get this win here.
I don't have a horse in this race, so I'm just watching and enjoying the chaos.
All right, where should we move on to next?
I'll just say right off the bat, I've got nothing on baseball.
There is nothing.
Well, you already, or I'm sorry, do you want to talk about the White Sox signing some bum reliever and Chris Flexen?
I do think it's funny that the Red Sox moved on from Chris Sale to go to Lucas Giolito.
Yeah.
Because the White Sox did that one already.
That's true. That's true. You know, it's funny. The Chris Sale and Lucas Giolito have long time connections with the White Sox, but they were never teammates.
No.
And they're not going to be teammates now in Boston as Chris Sale goes to Atlanta.
The White Sox did hire Jason Kanzler as their director of player development. Woo.
I don't know who that is.
I want to go through. How much do you think the Dodgers have spent so far this offseason on total guarantees?
Are you talking over their entire contract?
Yes. Total guarantees.
It's like over $1 billion, isn't it?
Yes, it's 1.043 billion.
Between Ohtani, Yamamoto, Glasnow, they re-signed Jason Hayward,
Joe Kelly.
Joe Kelly.
All right. Phillies are next, 172 million. Arizona, 122. Giants, 121.25. Cincinnati, 106.2.
Yeah, they just signed Frankie Montas, I think.
Yeah. And Jeimer Candelario,
Right.
Nick Martinez, Emilio Pagan. It's Kansas City, 105 million.
Yeah, they got themselves Michael Wacha, Chris Stanton, Hunter
Seth
Renfroe,
Lugo.
Seth Lugo.
Cardinals, 99 million.
Yeah, because they got Sonny
Sonny
Gray,
Gray,
Lance
Lance Lynn,
Lynn.
and Kyle
Yeah,
Gibson.
Kyle Gibson.
Detroit, 45.75.
Jack Flaherty, right? They got Jack
Kenta
Flaherty.
Maeda.
Oh, that's right. They sent Kenta Maeda. I forgot about that.
And Andrew Chafin.
The Sheriff, hee haw.
Boston, 39.5.
Lucas
Almost all of that.
Giolito. Giolito got the he isn't he making like
2 for 38.5.
yeah. So he's making almost 40 million over 2 years.
Atlanta Braves, 30 million, and that's for Reynaldo Lopez. Padres, 28 million. Rangers, 26.5. Toronto, 25.5. The White Sox, 24.3. Seattle, 24. Mets, 18.8. Pirates, 16.2. Baltimore, 13. So on and so forth. Let's get down. Oakland, 1.5. Tampa, 1.1. Twins, 950K. Yankees, Cubs, Marlins, Rockies, zero.
Mr. Blutarski.
And I'm gonna give
Zero
and I'm gonna give the
and
Yankees a pass on that because they brought
they
in Juan
trade for Juan
Soto.
Soto, yeah.
So it's not new money. You know, they brought in a guy that's going to be making big money. But yeah, so really the Cubs, Marlins, and Rockies, nada.
Cricket.
Abs
Cricket.
absolutely nada.
I still think, and I'm going to say this, knock on wood, I'm feeling pretty good right now. The opposite I was at the beginning of the offseason. I feel like we'll bring Cody Bellinger back. It just seems like his market has dried up elsewhere.
I mean, really, who else is out there?
I thought the Yankees were going to be a big player for him, and then they went and got Juan Soto. Then the Blue Jays were rumored to be hard in on him. They seem to have pivoted to other areas, so I can't help but wonder if...
The Giants, no. The Dodgers, no. I thought maybe the Red Sox, but the Red Sox rumors are now they're going to trim payroll.
Yeah, they're going to trim payroll, which maybe we can take advantage of. There might be a dark horse team out there. I don't see anybody in the Central doing that. Like, I don't think the Brewers are going to do that. I don't think the Pirates are going to do that, obviously. The Reds are pretty set.
The Reds just spent all their money. I don't think Cleveland, that doesn't make sense.
No,
for
they're
that.
Trying to shed. I think they're trying to shed payroll.
Oakland, no. White Sox, definitely no. Kansas City,
no.
No, I was saying they've already spent their money. I mean,
could Seattle be a dark horse, maybe?
I heard they're shedding salary too. That's why they traded that one dude, because he was going to be due a contract next year.
You think, I don't know where he'd play, but like a surprise, like the Rangers or something?
No, I heard that they're done. They're not spending anymore.
Bodes well for Jordan Montgomery, maybe too.
I mean, Phillies, maybe?
Where would he play, though?
I'm trying to remember who their outfield is. Schwarber.
Castellanos.
Oh, you know what, though? That center fielder they have. He's a good fielder, but he can't hit worth a crap. So, okay, I could see him playing center.
Yeah. Maybe. They're not afraid to spend.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Philly, but I think that's a dark horse.
That is a dark horse.
I
that
think
could be the Braves.
No.
The Mets say fuck it and try for it.
Maybe. I mean, really, the Cubs are the ones that make sense.
It seems like the Cubs, he's theirs to lose. Like, it feels like you're at the point where the Cubs don't have an excuse not to bring him back.
You're right. They don't have an excuse because the market has, I'm not saying dried up, because if it went to a certain point, I think the pool would open up a lot more. So they're going to have to pay for him, but it's the amount that Boris wants for him is not, that's not happening.
No.
But as you go, that salary drops. There's a certain point where the Cubs just have to pull the trigger, because otherwise other teams become viable options.
Right. And you know what? You kind of got to get, it almost feels like they're waiting for this to come to fruition. And it's like, listen, I've preached patience for a while now. And you know what? A lot of your desired targets that we've talked about are still out there. And okay, but they're not always going to be out there.
No, guys are going to start it's going to start picking up. Between, I mean, pitchers and catchers report in like 6 weeks. So
right.
You're going to start seeing dudes sign.
CubsCon is coming up.
Yeah, you gotta have something shiny to show, because people are going to lose their minds if you don't have something.
Tom Ricketts is going to just, he's going to punch a hole in the wall and then call Sammy Sosa to his chagrin.
CubsCon will be Ricketts prank calling Sammy Sosa. Guys, listen to this. He's like, Sammy Sosa picks up the phone. Hello? And he's like, is your refrigerator running? Pass. You better catch it.
And Ricketts tries to disguise his voice just by plugging his nose.
Is your refrigerator running?
Tom, is this you? No, it's Schlom.
That's so great. Because, like, it just makes me laugh because that's like the childish classic is your refrigerator running joke. That's amazing.
Do you have Prince Albert in a can? We better let the poor fellow out.
Boy. Yeah, I just hope something happens soon because I'm bored.
Yeah, and the White Sox keep signing people, but man, it is.
They're signing warm bodies.
Yeah, they are literally, this is going to be a brutal team.
I mean, the most I see coming out of this offseason is maybe some of those lottery tickets you traded for from the Braves. But who knows?
I'm starting to be less optimistic that Dylan Cease gets traded.
I mean, I think Chris Getz would love to get a massive haul in return, but who's going to be willing to do that? Our team's going to get desperate enough. Because, I mean, the Dodgers could. They don't have to be desperate, but they could do it because they can do it. Obviously, Baltimore has been a rumored spot, but I don't think Baltimore wants to give up the haul that the White Sox are asking for.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's the Dylan Cease, Corbin Burns, and Shane Bieber are available.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's, you know, I think Dylan Cease, you know, you don't know what Dylan Cease you're going to get. I mean, obviously, if it's the one from 2 years ago, you're like, yeah, I want that dude. But if it's the one from last year, you know, that's the
you don't want to give up a haul for that.
Yeah. So I think you sort of, I think this is going to end up being where, you know, you've got to wait for the market to shift towards you, because if there's a lot of options still available, you know, you're not going to get the haul you want. So maybe they pull him back and, you know, do the risky move of trading him mid-season at the trade deadline, because that one is, you're taking the gamble of, does he look like old old Dylan Cease, or does he look like last year Dylan Cease? Because if he looks not good, and your trade value drops even more, but if he turns it around, then man, you really played your hand well. And that's, I think Chris Getz would love to trade him now, because then they, you know, then you don't have to risk that, but they might have to play that hand and see how it goes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And the Cubs just did nothing. There's a nothing
crickets,
burger.
Crickets.
Yeah, Blackhawks. Yesterday was not a fun day.
No, I'm glad I had friends over. When they were coming over the beginning of the game, and then by the time everyone got here, it was already like down 4-0. So like, okay, we're playing video games. We're not watching any more of that.
Yeah,
I mean, and it's too bad because they almost pulled out a really good comeback the other night against them.
Yeah, I mean that was a tough loss, you know, but you know, it sucked that they lost, but, you know, to come back 2 days later and just get absolutely stomped in that game is that's a tough one.
Yeah. Now, we do have to talk about how awesome the Connor Bedard overtime goal was against Winnipeg.
Yeah.
That was sick. I mean, that place erupted like a playoff game.
I mean, that kid is so good.
The shot, the release for a 16-year-old like that,
18.
It's insane.
18-year-old.
Yeah, 18.
You said 16.
Oh, sorry.
That'd be crazy if he was 16 and doing this.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, he's almost a point a game player in the first 36 games of his career.
In a very tough league.
Yeah. He's got right now he's in 36 games, so we're not even at the halfway point. And 15 goals, 18 assists. So his projected is 34 goals and 41 assists, 75 point season.
75 points for an 18-year-old in the NHL.
That's,
Pretty damn impressive.
yeah. And it's funny because there are people that are just haters, and that's with this is a garbage team. Like, he has no talent around him.
No.
So, but I think those numbers are going to pick up in the second half when, he's sort of figured some things out. But there's haters out there
Of
that are,
course.
you know what stat they're using to talk shit on him?
Plus minus.
Plus minus.
The most irrelevant stat out there.
That stat hasn't been relevant since I was a kid.
Right.
And that was a long time ago. Like, that is the stupidest stat. But the people are, his plus minus. He sucks. The kid is 18 years old and he's a point a game player. This
Yeah.
is ridiculous. But I mean, I don't know. It's just, I don't know what else to say about this team. Is they've got injuries, they've got, they just have no talent. And it's going to be a tough sled the rest of the season.
Yeah. And I mean, they keep dropping like flies.
Yeah.
Everyone is getting hurt.
Cole Gutman had a goal.
Whoop-de-doo.
Let's see the Blackhawks injury report.
It's pretty full.
Joey Anderson injured. Andreas Athanasiou injured. Taylor Hall. Tyler Johnson. Seth Jones. Taylor Radish. It's brutal. You already didn't have a lot of talent.
Yeah, I mean you're a minor league team at this point.
A minor league team with, an absolute superstar.
Just got to be patient.
Yeah, let's see. And then I guess we can wrap this up with a little bowls.
Yeah, I was at the game against the Pacers the other night. Down 25, come roaring back to take the lead and then just completely sputter. And that Halliburton guy, he's going to be destroying the Bulls for many, many years.
He's good.
He's very good. He put on a clinic. And the row of Pacers fans behind us were in our ears shouting the whole time.
Yeah. So, I mean, you don't have Vooch right now. Andre Drummond has been playing pretty well in his place, but I don't think that's sustainable. I think he's a guy that, Vooch. This team has been operating really well by running the offense through Vooch. And I think that's the way that they're going to be the most competitive. But Andre Drummond, I think, should get a little more playing time, even if it's with Vooch, because he's such a good rebounder and he's such a spark plug. And I think, giving him 10 minutes a game is probably pretty good.
Yeah, I think so.
But I think honestly, I'm not gonna shit on Zach LaVine because especially since he's coming back soon. But I think without him there, it's really allowed Coby White and Pat Williams to start to show what they can do. And I'm worried. On the one hand, you're like, okay, well, you add a guy that's a NBA All-Star to your roster, you shouldn't get worse. And maybe some of these games he helps them, when they can't put up a ton of points. But my concern is that Coby White, and more importantly, Pat Williams, go back to the shit. Excuse me, the shadows, and don't play up to their potential.
Yeah. I mean, and again, I was talking about this with my brother, is we saw once again in the game against the Pacers where the Bulls came back from a huge deficit, but they couldn't hang on. They spurred at the end. And the whole thing is that they've played like dog crap in a lot of halves and had to come dig themselves out of holes. The whole thing is that it's not sustainable to keep doing that and winning.
No, it is not. But it like this team, I mean the game against Philadelphia the next game was a nice game, and I get that the Sixers didn't have Joel Embiid.
Right.
I get that. But
They still went out and won a game that they needed to win.
yeah, and they look solid in that game. They outscored the Sixers in every single quarter. And that's where it gets important, is the problem with the Bulls is, they either give up big leads or they fall down and and they can't make that comeback. Like the Pacers. They were down big, started to make a comeback, and then the Pacers just opened it up in the fourth.
Yep, and they ended up winning by a big margin.
Double digits. Pat Williams looked good in that game, though.
Yes, he did. I mean, he was probably the best bull that night.
Yeah, 22 points, 5 rebounds, 2 of 5 behind the arc. So it's you gotta take these victories where you can. And the Bulls have put a few wins together, so I think they would be in the play-in game if the season ended now. It would be nice though to be able to get out of that play-in and actually in the playoffs. But there's a big road ahead, and the big question is, Zach could be back in a week or so, and what's that dynamic going to change like? And that's the $10,000 question.
Right.
So, and I don't know the answer to it.
I don't either. I don't either.
And Michigan won.
Yeah, I saw that.
Huge. That's huge. I think Michigan wins the national championship.
Possible. They're looking pretty good.
I mean, I thought Alabama might be their biggest challenge. Because not because Alabama's a good team, but Nick Saban, when you give that dude a month to prep for a team.
Yeah. Hey, Nick Saban had the lead late. Couldn't hang on.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, watching that game, Michigan was the better team. It was
They didn't F
some
up so
gaffes.
much on special teams.
Yeah, that especially that first one. Had that dude caught that ball, and he had a head of steam. I mean, he probably Michigan winds up 14-0 at that point rather than 7-7.
Right.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Nope, I think I've said my piece.
I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. It's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter /X, and AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does, because I don't know if you know this. Hopefully you do. Alex is a really talented dude. And
oh,
not
thank
just in,
you.
Not just in one thing, but go to that website. He can paint, and he's a really talented dude. So make sure you check that out. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down.